Welcome back. Our guest this week wants more sunshine on state government. He's State Senator Democrat Jeremy Moss. Our lead story, Republicans continue to criticize the governor's nursing home COVID policies. On the OTR panel, Jonathan Osteen, Emily Lawler, and Bill Ballinger. Sit in with us as we get the inside out, Off the Record.
Production of Off the Record is made possible in part by the following. Business Leaders for Michigan has a strategic plan to make Michigan a top 10 state in the nation for jobs, personal income, and a healthy economy. Learn more at michigansroadtotop10.com. And now, this edition of Off the Record with Tim Skubick.
Thank you very much. Welcome back to this edition of Off the Record. And we have on our panel this week, Jonathan Osteen, Emily Lawler, and Bill Ballinger. And let's start with the lead story, which has to do with that separation agreement between the governor and her former public health director has now been broken. And why did they break this deal between Dr. Gordon and the governor, Jonathan?
Yeah, Tim, there was certainly a significant amount of backlash over this deal between Robert Gordon, the former health director, and the Whitmer administration through her general counsel, Mark Totten. They mutually agreed on Wednesday to waive the confidentiality clause of that $155,000 severance agreement. And that's, you know, certainly some people objected to the amount of money as well, but the fact that it had that confidentiality clause in it really drew a lot of criticism and questions over transparency and open government. Robert Gordon, of course, played key roles in a number of the governor's COVID-19 orders that were developed behind closed doors. Now, they agreed to waive this confidentiality provision, but yet, yesterday on Thursday, Gordon told the House Oversight Committee that he didn't plan to testify as they had requested, and said instead he submitted a letter that sort of, you know, said some vague general things about maybe there were some policy disagreements with the governor, but that he was very, very proud of his time. And the Whitmer administration didn't offer any new details either. So waiving this confidentiality clause in principle might look good, but it didn't have any practical implications yesterday because nothing changed.
Emily, in that one pager that he sent to the House Oversight Committee, he basically said that he and the governor had some disagreements, that, you know, all the policy, they were not on the same page. And that was basically it for him. So now the Republicans are going to go away?
I wouldn't count on that, Tim. I think that you know, there's been a lot of speculation around this since his departure in January. There's been a lot of questions. Obviously, the confidentiality agreement was one reason that those questions weren't being answered. That reason's been taken away. But to Jonathan's point, you know, the next big question is what the practical effect of that is. And Republicans are looking at ways to get those answers, even though they may not be forthcoming. And even though this confidentiality clause being removed doesn't seem to have elicited those answers for the public so far. So I would not say that this is a closed book by any means. I think that the governor has used the phrase something about how there's not more to the story here. I would say that Republicans absolutely think that there's more to the story here, at least from what we've seen so far.
Is that your take, William?
Pretty much, but honestly, what might be determined is not necessarily good for the Republicans, or it won't fit into their game plan. Because I think there's a suspicion in many quarters that Gordon quit out of frustration because the governor wanted to loosen up. Well, that's what the Republicans have always wanted her to do. So if that's what they find out, that Gordon wanted to keep the strictures on, be tough in fighting the pandemic, and Whitmer decided it was time to loosen up, actually, she should be applauded by the Republicans. Is that what they want?
Yeah, the sticky wicket here, Jonathan, is that the Republicans really want to do a deep dive into the governor's early pandemic policies vis-a-vis transferring COVID-infected senior citizens back into the nursing home setting. The governor has said consistently there were safety protocols in place. What the Republicans are trying to do is draw a dot between the movement of those COVID patients into the nursing homes, infecting other patients, and dying as a result. They have no proof of that, but that's where they would like to end up, right?
Yeah, I mean, we don't know what happened offline, but from emails that Bridge Michigan got this week through a Freedom of Information Act request, we know that Gordon had pushed a more conservative restaurant reopening plan than the one the governor announced just a week later on January 22, the day he resigned. He wanted to, for instance, cap capacity at a maximum of 20 or 25 people in a restaurant, regardless of its capacity. And he also warned that reopening restaurants too much would lead to super spreader events. So he was, clearly pushing for something more stringent than the governor announced. Now, there's no indication from these emails that there was a blow up at any given point, but there's also no indication that they were talking about nursing home policy at that point, which is the smoking gun that Republicans are looking for. A lot of the claims right now from Republicans are simply comparisons to New York, where, of course, Governor Andrew Cuomo is in trouble for underreporting his state health department, anyways, underreporting the number of deaths in nursing homes. There's no evidence that happened in Michigan. And in fact, lawmakers have heard hours and hours of testimony from state health officials, from nursing home industry officials last year. And they didn't find anything extremely damaging. I mean, there's this one policy initially that suggested, or it seemed to on paper mandate, that nursing homes should accept any transfers from hospitals of COVID-19 positive patients. But the administration says it immediately told nursing homes not to enforce that. And the nursing home industry has said they don't know of any instance that a nursing home was actually forced to accept the patient, which is what did happen more prevalently in New York.
Emily, go ahead.
Where I think the Republicans are going to run into problems on the nursing home issue is just that, if there was this systemic underreporting like had happened in New York, you'd expect Michigan's numbers to look differently than they do. Michigan has been below the national average, both in nursing home deaths and in that over, elderly population deaths. So, you would expect that if the nursing home deaths were being covered up, that there would be all these unaccounted for deaths in the elderly population. That's really not the case here. So I think that's going to be tough for them. And to Bill's point, I think that, Republicans may not find what they want in terms of Robert Gordon's resignation and his reasons for that overall. But where I think that they could win here or, have some sort of political victory is that all along, the governor has been saying that these decisions are based on science and data. If that's not what was happening here, if Robert Gordon was looking at this and saying, actually, the science and data would lead me to make this decision, and the Republicans have been saying all along, like, why make this so subjective? Why not set these metrics and benchmarks? I think that they could score a few points there and sort of make the point that, if it's not science and data that are driving these decisions, if it is more subjective, that, they could make the case that maybe there should be some metrics and that, something other than the governor and possibly her agreements or disagreements with some of her own cabinet members should be driving the openings and closings.
Bill, we learned late yesterday that the Republicans are looking at the possibility, underscore the possibility of appointing a special prosecutor to look into all of this nursing home stuff, to which Senator Hertel, a Democrat, says there's no way to do that. So here we go. I mean, this is going to get interesting, is it not?
It is. I mean, they're trying to make something out of the fact that Dana Nessel, the attorney general, refused to investigate the charges raised by Peter Lucido, the Macomb County prosecutor, about nursing home deaths in Macomb County. And they're pushing it even farther. They're not only denouncing Nessel, but they're saying we might appoint a special prosecutor. Well, Senator Hertel, a Democrat, a ranking member on the Appropriations Committee, points out, I'm not sure we have the power. What is that? There is no such thing. Special prosecutor? It, doesn't exist, never has existed, appointed by the Senate. And he views this as pure politics. And frankly, unless the Republicans can produce some tangible evidence that they can really make something like that happen, I think they're going to end up looking a little foolish. They ought to keep on the issue that Lucido is pursuing. That maybe is legitimate. But this idea of a special prosecutor, I don't think it's going to work.
All right, let's talk briefly, Emily, about the new COVID numbers, which are not good. We had a nice little trend downward going on for 3 or 4 weeks, and what pops up? The numbers flipped and are now going up. What's going on?
Yeah, unfortunately, those numbers are going on, are going up. We've seen some things driving that. I think that, honestly, the weather has been really nice. I think that maybe there's a little bit too people just seeing each other more often. Obviously, restaurants have opened back up. We've opened all the sectors of our economy at this point. Correct me if I'm wrong, someone, but we've reopened some of those bigger venues. We've reopened indoor dining at restaurants. And I think that, you know, there's a case to be made that potentially we're seeing the effects of that at this point. And of course, we're all racing to get the vaccine. And, you know, I'm not sure that people are necessarily 100% aware of all the protocols around the vaccine and how long it takes to get the immunity that the vaccine provides, how long it takes to go into effect. So I think that there's just a few factors that are combining here to make our numbers look worse, certainly, than they did a week ago, a month ago, 2 weeks ago, et cetera.
Obviously, the addition of the variant to the equation has changed the dynamics. We're now up to about 750 cases. And also, I thought this was an interesting point the health department made this week. We got 70% of the people who have been exposed to COVID still wandering around in the hinterland, not quarantining, which is what they're supposed to do. And if they've got it, they're spreading it. And so, Jonathan, push is going to come the shove here. The governor acknowledged yesterday on the radio that she sort of knew that if we opened up restaurants, the cases might go up. What does she do now?
Yeah, well, that's a very good question. I mean, the data is sort of mixed. Obviously, it's troubling that we have all these new cases. But there's some good news. You know, a smaller portion of the new cases are older people who are more susceptible to the virus and maybe more likely to die. Part of that, of course, is because a lot of those people are now vaccinated. Hospitalizations are rising, but not at the extreme rate they were at other surges during this pandemic. So, you know, there's we're really, as Emily mentioned, there's this race to vaccinate everybody. And right now, the administration is grappling with how to encourage people to still take this virus seriously, despite the optimism that people are feeling because the virus is out there. So we do know, as we're taping this Friday morning, Tim, that the governor has scheduled a press conference to update on COVID-19. So we may hear more from her on that front.
Bill, the real fear is that we get into another surge and maybe you have to walk back some of this stuff. She's not there yet, but she's got to be looking at that.
She's got to be looking at it, but I think she realizes that psychologically the population is going to have a tough time going back to the bad old days of 2020. They feel they've been through everything they deserve to have to have been put through over the last year, and they see the vaccine coming. And they think, you know, better days are ahead and we're on track and let's stay on that course and not reverse things back to lockdown mode.
All right. Let's talk about sunshine on government by calling in our guest today, State Senator Jeremy Moss from Southfield. Senator, we're going to let's start the discussion with the name of Mike Shirky. You desperately would like to pass legislation for financial disclosure. He desperately would like to kill it. How do you get around him, sir?
Well, so I think we build the case caucus member by caucus member in the Republican caucus, and that's kind of what we've done. And so when you look at our FOIA legislation, for example, if you look at all of the senators who previously served as House members, I think we have enough votes right there of people who have been on the record supporting our transparency package. And certainly on financial disclosure, there's another one that has won bipartisan support. So I know that Senator Shirky has some concerns, but I also know he's been engaged on these issues, especially with my partner on these transparency items, Ed McBroom. So I'm hopeful. I'm optimistic. I remember a time when I served in the State House many years ago and we were pushing forward on this. It didn't have a lot of support at all. And I had to make the case member by member that this is important here in the state of Michigan so that citizens have more access to how their government runs. And so we've built support, we've gained momentum, and now that momentum's coming through Mike Shirky's office.
So basically you're asking Republicans to commit political suicide by going around their leader.
No, I don't think that that's the case at all. First of all, I think most Republicans are on the record there. So I don't think they have a problem talking about this publicly. I think that Mike Shirky has a chance to better vet this legislation, offer suggestions for improvements. But the membership is there. And so now we're just waiting for it to come up for a vote.
Emily.
Senator, historically, why does this always stop at the Senate Majority Leader's doorstep? What is behind that?
So, you know, this is about the fourth legislative session that we pushed these measures forward. That first legislative session, again, it was just about getting it out of the House. And we got these transparency measures out of the House with almost unanimous support, by overwhelming bipartisan support, but not quite unanimous. But then the next session, we were able to get it out of the House unanimously, and it was the first bipartisan bill package that the House sent to the state Senate. Unfortunately, we ran into former Republican leader Arlen Meekhof, who said, nope, no way, no how, dead on arrival. And so that's kind of been the biggest hurdle to clear. But, you know, when I came into the Senate with Ed McBroom after having drafted these bills to shine more light on state government in the House, it was being vetted in the Senate for the very first time. Arlen Meekhof did not allow senior staff to even look at this. So now we've overcome that hurdle, and there is engagement with the Senate Majority Leader's office on this. My motto has been, as a House member, I wasn't able to get it through the Senate. So if you can't beat them, join them. And that's why I ran for the state Senate, to start from the Senate end and work our way back to the House.
Jonathan.
Senator, your public records request legislation, Senator Shirky, for instance, has said he fears it might, get in the way of debate and negotiation. But on the flip side, you've got this week Democratic Secretary of State Jocelyn Benson, liberal advocacy group Progress Michigan, saying your proposal is way too easy on the legislature, that it has all these loopholes and carve-outs for the legislature. Wondering if you can address that broadly and also specifically speak to this idea that caucus communications would be exempt from disclosure. Couldn't anything be considered a caucus communication if a lobbyist wanted to, or if Betsy DeVos wanted to tell the legislature they should do something? Couldn't she write an email to Dear Caucus and then get around public disclosure requirements that you're proposing?
So you got a lot of questions there, and I got an answer for each one of them. So to the Shirky concerns, 48 other states do this. 48 other states are subjected to disclosure of their documents. So we aren't so special and unique here in Michigan that somehow our constituents, our residents, aren't deserving of the same information as residents in other states. Regarding Progress Michigan's ballot proposal, I will say this. When we drafted this legislation all those years ago, the biggest beneficiaries of open records requests, those who request records of government the most, and I'm talking about lawyers from the ACLU, I'm talking about policy analysts from the Mackinac Center for Public Policy, I'm talking about journalists like you who are affiliated with the Michigan Press Association. They were at the table drafting this legislation with us, and they fully support our endeavors. So we've built the coalition of those who are asking for these documents to support our legislation. And I feel very confident that we are doing right by them and right by the constituents of Michigan. Regarding that caucus document piece, because I know that is something that critics have hung on to. The reality is that when we go into caucus meetings, we talk about bills and we have caucus documents of bill analysis. And as bills change, those analysis documents change. So to disclose a document that is a moment in time, by the time it's up for public disclosure, it may be inaccurate, it may be false, it may be outdated. And if you don't sit in that caucus room without that context, that document could be politically weaponized from one party to the other. So that's the caucus document piece. But in terms of a lobbyist, there is absolutely no exemption from disclosure between a communication between a lobbyist and legislator. That would be subject to disclosure no matter what.
Mr. Ballinger.
Senator, what could you give Senator Shirky that would make him accept what you want him to do and the legislature to do with this legislation?
You know, I'm not exactly sure. And I know that my partner on this endeavor, Ed McBroom, is taking the lead in having those conversations with Senator Shirky. I know that he has a concern that somehow text messages or communications with his family members and with his wife that are not government related would somehow be subjected to disclosure. But I'm a former city councilman, and every city council in the state of Michigan is subjected to this, and it doesn't disrupt their communications with their loved ones. Every department head in the state of Michigan is subjected to this, and it doesn't disrupt their everyday communication. And I've said throughout this process, you know, the mundane, the boring communications aren't going to be requested because they're not pertinent to any day story that you might write. It's the bad behavior that we want to uncover. So if you have nothing to hide, you should have nothing to worry about.
Senator, what is the state of the relationship between the Democratic caucus in the Senate and the Republican caucus in light of what you Democrats did this week, which was to threaten to withhold votes on immediate effect, which means nothing to the general public, but the bottom line is you could hold up legislation that the public maybe wants. Things are awful between the two caucuses, right or not?
They're tough. The situation in the state Senate's a little bit untenable, and we have to figure out how to work with one another. But the fact of the matter is we have the largest Senate Democratic caucus in a generation. And so when we have leverage over procedural rules to impact policy, we will use them because we have more Democratic state senators in more than a decade. And so, yeah, the relationship is frosty and it's tough. But I'm hopeful that if we can get out of the chaos of this pandemic that we've all been suffering under for a year, once we get to that light at the end of the tunnel and that cloud is lifted from over us, that better relationships are coming.
So it's 6 to 7 more months of acrimony.
Well, we've been doing it for a year, so what's another 6 months?
Emily?
Senator, Jonathan mentioned some of the concerns from Secretary Benson and Progress Michigan about sort of the equity between the legislature and the governor and how they're covered under this legislation. What have you been hearing from the governor's office on these bills?
So we've been engaged with the governor's office from the very beginning, including when we introduced this package last year. And I know that the governor is a transparency hawk herself, and she started her term with executive directives like no other governor before her to subject her administration to more sunshine. So we are consistently engaged with the governor's office, and I'm looking forward to getting a product to her desk that she will sign.
Jonathan?
But have they expressed those concerns that it applies more stringently to the executive than to the legislative branch?
So I think, you know, that point of contention that we're all discussing is the appeals process. So you request a document from the legislature. The appeals process has to meet constitutional muster. And we have constitutional issues with judicial review. So I'm open to better ideas, but we also have to have a FOIA law, a LORA law that is enforceable. And so, again, if anybody can bring me a better idea of the appeals process, I'm open to it.
Jonathan?
Senator, another concern Progress Michigan has made I'd like to ask you about. Why is there a provision in your proposal that would not make a record, a public record, until 15 days that it's in the possession of the legislature? I know there are record retention provisions in the bill separately, but Progress Michigan called this a proactive destruction clause, you know, suggesting lawmakers would have 15 days to delete something before it became public. Can you speak to that?
So I'm be honest with you, I'm disappointed with Progress Michigan's take on that, because that's absolutely not what the legislation says. And when I introduced this legislation, and that 15-day window has been in every draft of this legislation, and when I introduced it as a House member, Progress Michigan awarded me their Legislator of the Month. And that award sits on my wall in my office, and I can return it if they want me to. But so several years ago, they didn't have a problem with this provision, but I can explain it because we wanted to put in a 15-day window for when a document could be requested so that each caucus didn't have the ability to immediately ambush the other caucus with Laura requests once bills came on the agenda, that we wanted a little bit of breathing room so that with this Laura tool couldn't be weaponized from one caucus to the other. So there's a 15-day window before a document can be requested. But on the 15th day, it's open to disclosure. And we even put in the law that there is no ability, there is no way for somebody to destroy that document within that 15-day window. So that's just a misinterpretation on the end of Progress Michigan. But this has also been in every version of our drafts that has won praise from Progress Michigan in the past.
Bill, we have less than a minute. A quick question, please, to put a top on this.
Immediate effect. Why can't the Senate Republican majority simply gavel it through like they do in the House? They could do that if they want to.
There's a lot in the House that we can't do in the Senate. And so the procedures in the House call for a vote on immediate effect. And that's a good thing, because I served in the House where they totally abused that process. And we tried every which way to display in the House
there weren't the votes for immediate effect. Why don't the Senate majority Republicans simply gavel it through like they do in the House?
It's got to be put up for a vote.
Senator, on that ominous note, thank you, sir. It's good to see you. And you'll keep us posted on this legislation. Also, our thanks to Emily and Bill and Jonathan Osting. And we'll see you right here next week for the next edition of Off the Record.
Production of Off the Record is made possible in part by the following. Business Leaders for Michigan has a strategic plan to make Michigan a top 10 state in the nation for jobs, personal income, and a healthy economy. Learn more at michiganstoptop10.com. For more Off the Record, visit WKAR.org. Michigan Public Television stations have contributed to the production costs of Off the Record with Tim Skubick.